You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 72. The Lord of the Gallows. The axis of the world was Yggdrasil. That ash soared, and its branches fanned over gods and men and giants and dwarfs. It sheltered all creation. One root dug deep into Niflheim, and under that root of the spring, Vergelmir seethed and growled like water in a cauldron. Down there, the dragon Nidhogg ripped apart corpses. Between mouthfuls, he sent the squirrel, Ratatosk, whisking up the trunk from deepest earth to heaven. It carried insults to the eagle who sat on the topmost bough, with a hawk perched on its brow. And Nidhogg was not content with corpses. He and his vile accomplices gnawed at the root of Yggdrasil itself, trying to loosen what was firm and put an end to the eternal. Other creatures, too, attacked and preyed off the living tree. Four stags nibbled at the new leaves, and goats tugged and tore off the tender shoots. Parts of the huge trunk were peeling, parts were soft and rotten. Yggdrasil whimpered, and Yggdrasil groaned. A second root curled into Asgard. Under that root flowed the well of Urd, the spring of destiny, where the gods gathered each day and held a court of justice. The three Norns lived nearby, fate and being and necessity. They shaped the life of each man from his first day to his last. And every day they sprinkled water on the branches of Yggdrasil and nourished the suffering tree. The third root burrowed into that part of Jotunheim held by the frost giants. Under that root bubbled the spring guarded by wise Mimir, and the water in that well gave insight to those who tasted it. The god Heimdall left his shrieking horn there until the day when he would need it to summon every living creature to Ragnarok. And Odin had given up one eye for a single draught from it. He won immense knowledge there, and with it the thirst for yet greater wisdom. So the Terrible One approached Yggdrasil alone. Odin said, "I hung from that wind-swept tree, hung there for 9 long nights. I was pierced by a spear. I was an offering to Odin. Myself to myself. No one has ever known, or will ever know, the roots of that ancient tree. No one came to comfort me with bread. No one revived me with a drink from a horn. I peered at the worlds below. I seized the runes, shrieking I seized them, then I fell back. From Bolthor's famous son, Bestla's father, I learned 9 powerful songs. I was able to drain the precious mead from the cauldron Odrorir. Then I began to thrive. My wisdom grew. I prospered and was fruitful. One word gained me many words. One deed gained me many deeds. The charms I know are not known by the wives of kings, nor by any men. The first is called Help, because it can comfort grief and lessen pain and cure sickness. I know a second. Any man who hopes to become a healer needs to know it. I know a third. If I should sorely need help to hold back my enemy, I can blunt my opponent's blade and soften his staff so that he cannot wound me. I know a fourth. If anyone should bind me hand and foot, this charm is so great that the locks spring apart, releasing my limbs. I can walk free. I know a fifth. If I should see a well-aimed arrow speeding to its mark, I can catch it however fast it flies. I have only to fix it with my eye. I know a sixth. If anyone thinks to finish me by sending a sapling's roots engraved with runes, that hero, full of spleen, will only destroy himself. I know a seventh. If I should see the hall roof burst into flames over the heads of my chosen comrades, I can quench the blaze, however fierce it may be. I know the charm. I know an eighth. All men would be well advised to learn it. If hatred takes root in men's minds, I can uproot it. I know a ninth. If I should need to save my ship in a storm, I can calm the wind that whips off wave crests and put the sea to sleep. I know a tenth. If ever I see witches flying on rafters, I can sing so that they go into a whirl and cannot change back into their day shapes or find their way to their own front doors. I know an eleventh. If I have to lead loyal, long-loved friends into a fight, I can sing behind my shield, and they will go from strength to strength, unscathed to the battle, unscathed after battle, unscathed they return home. I know a twelfth. If I see a hanged man swinging from a tree with his heels above my head, I can cut and color the runes so that he will come down and talk to me. I know a thirteenth. If I sprinkle water over a child, he will never fall in the thick of battle, nor falter and sink in the sword play. I know a fourteenth. If I so desire, I can tell men the names of the gods and the elves one by one. Few fools can do this. I know a fifteenth. The dwarf Theodorir sang it in front of Daling's doors. A charm of power for the gods, glory for the elves, wisdom for Odin. I know a sixteenth. If I long for love play, I can turn the mind and win the heart of a white-armed woman. I know a seventeenth. Such a charm that a young girl will be loath to forsake me. I know an eighteenth. I will never tell it to a girl or married woman unless I am lying in her arms, or she is my own sister. What you and you alone know is always the most potent, and that is the last of the charms. Those were the words of Odin, before there were men. These were his words after his death, when he rose again.
So I thought it only appropriate, since we saw Ratatosk the squirrel and the eagle at the top of the world tree last episode in Thor Blood Oath number 2, that I should tell the story a little bit. This is a kind of a combination of myths. It's actually a description of some of the Norse cosmology is incorporated into the story of Odin hanging himself in the tree. And as we've already seen, we've seen a little bit of this imagery already in the first issue of Thor Blood Oath, of Odin hanging from the world tree, a sacrifice to himself, as alluded to in this myth. So I thought that it was probably time to read this. Interesting parallels here, and it's still not really certain whether all of this predates the Christian influence on Norse mythology, though we certainly have some evidence that most of it does predate Christianity. It may indeed have been influenced by the story of the crucifixion. As Kevin Crosley Holland points out, both Odin and Jesus are sacrificed willingly. Both of them are pierced by a spear. Both of them are withheld drink. In this case, you know, Jesus was fed vinegar. Nobody offered Odin anything. And of course, both of them supposedly rise from the dead. In return, Odin gains a store of arcane knowledge, and this is what he discounts, various charms and spells. And you can look to the ancient Norse and feel, Odin sacrificed himself to gain the knowledge that is only known by the dead. And the pursuit of wisdom is something that follows Odin around throughout the myth. And of course, we've heard how Odin sacrificed his eye to gain the wisdom of the universe from the well of Mimir. And that's something we talked about in the show many, many, many episodes ago. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, the music is excerpted from Edain, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith. It is copyright by the composer, Mr. Mats Wendt, and is used with permission. You can go listen to the entire 16 hours of Edain, the Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, for free over at Edain, that's EDDAN.net. And we're going to go ahead and move on now. We're going to go ahead and cover Thor Blood Oath number 3 as we move along to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And as we just said, this is Thor Blood Oath number 3. Has a cover date of December of 2005, retailed for $2.99. Story and art are by Michael Avon Uming and Scott Collins. Soto Colors A. Crossley did the colors on this. Dave Landfear was the letterer. Laser Schmidt and Siddleson were the assistant editors. Tom Brevoort was the editor. Joe Quesada was the editor-in-chief. And Dan Buckley was the publisher. On the cover, we see Thor and Hercules fighting in what looks like a rainstorm, which would make sense because, Thor being the thunder god and all. However, it also kind of doesn't make sense because no such scene actually appears inside the comic. And that skull is still tumbling down the border. Yeah, we still have that Celtic knotwork sort of border thing and the broken skull kind of falling down. Anyway, so we open up to the front page. We get a little bit of recap here of what has gone on so far. Lo, in the days of old, Thor and his Oath brothers, the Warriors Three, Fendral, which they misspelled, Volstagg and Hogun, did journey on a mission of reparation as the three had unknowingly killed the son of a giant in the guise of a sea creature. Charged with murder at the place of judgment called the All-Thing, Thor stood by his brothers to share their fate. 'Twas not a call of death from the giants for sentence, but a list of magical items the giants have asked for. Failure would bring shame to the gods and death to the blood. Failure would bring shame to the gods and death to the brothers' blood. And we pick up where we left off last issue, where Thor and the Warriors Three have appeared in the world of Olympus. And they have, basically, they had an encounter with the god Dionysus, who is all kind of aged and decrepit now because Hercules has basically stolen his pig. And of course, this is not an ordinary pig. This is a magical pig that whenever it touches water, changes it into wine. So Hercules is, kind of monopolizing all of Dionysus's wine. And so Dionysus has gotten kind of shriveled up like a raisin. And the four of them had stumbled across where Hercules is staying, and he is surrounded by a veritable United Nations of beautiful women. And they're along this very sylvan-looking riverbank, and the pig is there standing in the water. And it's like the entire river is made out of wine, which seems to me would be really nasty. Can you imagine, how sticky this is? I just can't imagine how gross an entire river of red wine would be. I don't even want to think about it. And not even mentioning how gross it would be to actually swim in it and get all sticky and covered with this gook. And the pig is standing right in this, probably shitting in it too. And yuck. And the pig is there beside him. And Hercules is obviously drunk out of his mind. And the women are kind of fawning over Hercules, and he's kind of got his arms around a bunch of them, and he's basically rude, crude, and socially unacceptable, which is what Hercules is good at. One of the women is quoting to him some kind of poetry in his praise. "Eyes like fire, arms of stone, a mountainous chest, "Oh, Hercules, son of..." And he belches in her face. He's like, "What fine poetry. What be thy name again?" And we have a big double page spread here of Hercules surrounded by the women, and Thor is kind of a bit in the background getting ready to come out and confront Hercules. We see the Greek gods kind of overlooking the scene, and so we have Hermes, and we have Zeus, and we have, I believe, is Poseidon. They don't really mention his name, so I'm really not sure, but I think it's Poseidon. Apollo and Artemis. They're kind of overlooking and commenting. Hermes is, "See, have I not told thee, brothers and sisters of heaven, a match to give glee to the gods such as old as we? They shall shatter mountains before us."
"Indeed, Hermes. Lest they broke upon each other, I had to stop it, lest they break the heavens and sky as well. It does seem my son could use a good kicking in the rear, though."
"I bet he is about to receive that, my lord."
"Apollo shall take that bet, sire." "Artemis shall not." And Thor and the Warriors 3 kind of, you know, deciding what to do here. And Thor decides to approach him. And he comes up and he says, "Hercules, son of Zeus, last we met, we nearly broke ourselves upon each other." Now, so this places this in Marvel continuity now to before Thor number 125. It doesn't give it an exact place, but remember, I think we talked about this a long time ago. We covered the Thor annual. I believe that was Thor annual number 2, which was a retelling of the first time that Thor and Hercules encountered each other way back in the distant past. But before Thor number 125, where they met for the first time in the present day. So here, this is their second meeting, essentially.
"Dare I say I knew not what the outcome would have been had we not been stopped." And Volstagg is like, "Are you saying you could not best him?"
And Thor doesn't look real pleased by that comment. And he goes stalking forward. And the Warriors 3 are kind of egging him on. And he's like, "Hey, he's drunk. You can take him." And after he's gone, Fandral's like, "Shall we take wagers?" And Hermes is delighted by this. He says, "'Tis a clashing of gods. What fair play we shall have such a sight." And Thor's like, "Ho, Hercules, son of Zeus, strongest man in his realm. It is I, Thor, your friend from the land of Asgard. I hail you in peace." And Hercules is like, "Strongest man in his realm? You mean all realms, do you not, stranger?" So obviously at this point, Hercules does not recognize his old buddy Thor. And Thor's like, "Stranger, I know you have drunk deep of wine, but how couldst thou not recognize Thor, son of Odin and god of thunder?"
"Aye, an echo of your name does ring in my head. Had we a tussle?"
"A tussle? When gods clashed, it is no mere tussle. But that is not why I have come. I have come to retrieve the magic pig of Dionysus, whose wine you have hoarded for months."
And Hercules is angry about that. "Ha! I would enjoy seeing you try. If Dionysus wants it back so badly, why does he not ask?" "Because you are a thug, a brute, and clearly drunk out of your mind."
"Nay, he's just frightened of me."
"Cowards wait, heroes take their time. Right, my beautiful muse?
I shall return it upon my own time."
And Dionysus comes up behind Thor.
"You've drunk your welcome, Hercules. I no longer wish your friendship or company. I have new company now, and his name is Thor, a god of wisdom, strength, and integrity, and he shall kick your behind in the name of..."
"Bah!" says Hercules. "And hold this a moment, pretty." And he sets his cup aside to one of the women, and he says, "Enough of this blathering. I seek a meeting of fists." And he raises his hand up, and he strikes the river of wine, which is kind of where they're sitting along this river, and splashes this huge burst of wine up at Thor. And then we see in the next page, a whole page spread of Hercules is leaping forth and just belting Thor as hard as he can with his left hand. The giant crack, he sends Thor flying over the trees. And Hermes is really excited about this. "Yes, it's begun." And Fandral is like, "By Sleipnir's dung." And Hogan looks really pleased to see this fight starting. And Thor goes landing in the forest with a firk. And Hercules is coming after him.
"Ask me now for the pig, god of thunder, and ask nicely. Perhaps I shall even give thee a drink, braggart."
And Thor's like, "Ask nicely. Nicely I shall pummel thee deep into the ground, and the world shall know your name and defeat."
And he smacks Hercules with his left. I wonder if Scott Collins is left-handed, because everyone's leading with their left here. Though this is not actually consistent with the next panel, which shows Thor striking him with his right hand. But I guess that the editor just didn't catch that. And he sends Hercules flying, and the Warriors 3 decide, okay, now's the time to go capture the pig. And so Fandral and Hogan are after the pig, and Volstagg's like, I'll go get the maiden. And he goes off to, quote-unquote, rescue the girls, and he says, Volstagg shall keep you safe from these ruffians. And Dionysus says, my pig, my wonderful pig, is running around the bushes, and Fandral and Hogan are trying to capture it. And Poseidon is like, maybe I shall partake in the wager.
This can only turn bad, says Zeus. I can see it now.
Ares would have enjoyed this.
And Apollo's like, well, I'm impressed. They could fight all day.
And all night, says Artemis. At least someone was thinking of the maiden. That fat man has manners.
And we go back to Thor and Hercules fighting, and Hercules has got Thor in a sort of wrestling hold, and has got him in like a bear hug, and Thor's struggling to get away. And this is one of those panels that bothers me, where Thor's chin looks like a giant tumor. I'm not real fond of this sometimes.
It's not a tumor.
But he then decides he's going to headbutt Hercules, and headbutts him with a giant crack, and his helmet flies off, and Hercules is knocked back. He's like, oh, what stone is thy head made of? And Apollo's like, Ares should see this. And Hermes like, no, he ruins everything. There's a reason he wasn't invited. And looks like Thor's helmet was dented by this, and he's like, blasted thick Greek head.
Blast my head? Blast yours, Asgardian.
And at this point, Thor's like, ah, so now I've rattled your memory.
Yes, and now I remember why I wanted to finish pounding on you.
And lunges for Thor. Thor lifts him up over his head and hurls him at a giant rock. He smashes the rock with a giant boom and sends, you know, rock and rubble and boulders flying everywhere. And Thor's managing to deflect all the rubble. But Thor is pounded from above by Hercules, who's coming down. Very Jack Kirby-ish move here. And I've never really seen it anywhere but a Jack Kirby comic before now. And anyway, so Thor gets pounded into the dust here by Hercules, but he manages to grab Hercules' foot, trips him over face down onto the ground, and then he picks him up and starts whirling him around like he does with his hammer. And he's like, you, my friend, need to be put back in your place. And Poseidon's like, the nerve! Does he not know it is a god he whirls so?
Forget not who the son of Odin is, old friend, says Zeus. I dare say this is just what my boy needs.
And Thor sends Hercules flying straight up in the air. And he says, with the gods, not drunkards and braggarts. And everyone is watching Hercules fly up in the air, except for Fandral and Hogan, who are still chasing after the pig. And Dionysus is kibitzing and saying,
go, brothers, you nearly have him. He's only a pig.
And Hogan's like, if I had a spear. And Hercules goes flying up, even above the gods who are kind of watching down on them. And Poseidon's like, get back down there and fight, boy.
I told thee what arrogance and sloth would bring thee, son.
And Hercules is like, I'm trying, father, I'm trying. And he's coming down like swan diving down towards Thor. And Thor is rearing back to give Hercules a giant punch. And he's thinking to himself, last I parried with Hercules, it was as a friend, but he has forgotten me in his drunken sloth. I shall remind him we are of the blood of gods, or die trying. And the two of them are approaching each other rapidly, and they strike fists right kind of in the middle, and a giant brachathoom, this kind of big giant shockwave, it just blows everything. You have the river splashing, and you see the pig flying, and Fandral and Hogan are being blown away with the pig. See Volstagg and the girls being blown away. And Hermes is like, ooh. Artemis, ouch. And you see Hogan and Fandral end up in a tree. And we see the giant crater has opened up where the two of them has struck. And the two of them are laying there stunned. And Hercules is starting to recover. And it's like, you have won the respect of Hercules. But your will matches mine not. And you see Hercules go, hoof. He grabs Thor in a neck hold, and everyone's like, Odin's beard. And Hercules like, and now I must end this. And we definitely get the sense here that Hercules is going to break Thor's neck. And that is where the story is to be continued. So what can I say about this? Well, basically, it's just one long fight scene. And I know I've definitely said this before, but when we get to an issue that is basically just one long fight scene, it doesn't take very long to cover it. Like the previous issues, absolutely beautifully drawn. And we have a lot of single page and double page spreads here of, this giant Brakathoom page is just amazing. I just love this, the irresistible force meeting the unmovable object. I love his treatment here, Scott Collins, his treatment of the Greek gods. I love the way that they're depicted here. They're all very unique. Now, the characters of Apollo and Artemis have appeared before in Marvel Comics. And, of course, we've seen Zeus before on the show even. Dionysus certainly looks very different from anything we've seen in Marvel Comics before. I'm not sure if Poseidon has been one of these characters that's appeared in Marvel Comics before. But again, I'm not that familiar with Marvel's treatment of the Greek gods. Of course, these are issues that we'll eventually get to in the Thor series where they're appearing. Love the way he's drawn Hermes here. It reminds me a whole lot, actually, of the way George Perez drew Hermes in the Wonder Woman series over at DC. Now, I imagine that really there's only a few variations on Hermes that you can do. Most of them, of course, would be based on how Hermes was depicted by the ancient Greeks themselves. Because, obviously, he's not a character that is bound by, comic book conventions per se. And so, obviously, one version is going to look like any other version. It's a good thing that the Greek gods and the Norse gods are not really bound by copyright. But anyway, really enjoy this issue, as always. Story-wise, it was equally as enjoyable, and I have to say, I'm really enjoying the art a lot, but it's difficult to actually tell a story like this without good writing. Have it both be exciting and funny, because there's definitely a lot of humor in these situations. This is a very light-hearted issue, even though it's basically these two guys beating each other to a pulp. This is turning out to be a really, really great series. And of this, I really like this one the best. There is a bit of the tumor chin going on with Thor. But by and large, I'm really impressed by the artwork. I love Scott Collins' portrayal of Hercules. It is both consistent with what we've seen in other portrayals in the Marvel Universe. At the same time, very visually exciting. There's a lot going on here. Overall, I've been very impressed by the series, and I'm really, really looking forward to future episodes. This is obviously one of those six-issue limited series. It was done for the trade market. You want to have some overlap of plot, but not too much. That's why we're getting kind of a typical two-panel review of the story so far at the beginning of each issue, because this is really being written for the trade, as we can see. Speaking of being written for the trade, thanks very much once again to Walt Grogan. Now, Walt designed the new Facebook banner for us, and I'm now using that also on the Comics Podcast Network website to help advertise the show. So thanks very much, Walt. Now, Walt's reward for helping us out here with this was he requested a sketch of Captain Marvel from DC, and so I was happy to oblige him, and gave it to him a couple of weeks ago, and he seemed fairly pleased with it. So this is just a reminder, if you want to do some sort of a graphic or something, or a liner, or new theme or whatever for the show, please feel free to do so, and I will give you a reward of some kind. We can discuss the terms of that kind of individually. But, Walt chose a sketch, and I provided a sketch, and hopefully he's happy with that. Anyway, so thanks very much once again for listening. If you want to email the show, please do so. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, the Radio Free Asgard group there. And a very happy little group we are. So I hope you'd all join us there. All right, so without further ado, this is Tom Harrison, Chicago, Illinois, signing off. And we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.